Good morning, everyone. Thank you, everybody, for coming. I'm Margie Glass, the Special Projects Coordinator at YU Connect. Wow, what a crowd. Even in the rain, I was sure I woke up this morning, it was going to be beautiful. It was going to be one of those sunny May mornings. It isn't. But we still have a great crowd. And that shows what a caring community we are. Many of you are here today because you love someone, you want to assist someone, you want to have a better relationship, you want to learn more. And that's what YU Connect is about. We're here to help. We're your dating resource. We're open to everyone, not only YU students. We're here, we're a group of professionals who have been involved in guiding, educating, and matchmaking. In fact, important notice, those of you who have 350 engagements on your table, that's incorrect. We're up to 359, we're happy to say. Just can't print the flyers fast enough. So we have 359 engagements and a very friendly office. As you go through the morning, if you meet any of the YU Connect staff members, you'll see how nice and warm and friendly and caring these people are. They're here to help. And people are always stopping by. They want to know, kids from the Heights, people from Yeshiva University, people who are just stopping in and ask us questions about where to date or how to help their community. Phone calls are coming in internationally. So this morning, we're going to hold a very interesting symposium, which I'm sure you will enjoy because we have fantastic panelists. Before we start the symposium, which will last about an hour, we want to thank a number of people. Of course, we want to thank our host, the congregation Beth Shalom, who is giving us this ballroom, and Rabbi Haynes, the wonderful Bora Dastra, Michael Novak, the executive director. And we do have a wonderful event committee, 50 terrific couples who publicly lent their names in support and nudged their friends and were our goodwill ambassadors to bring in a crowd like this. Do we need extra chairs? There are extra chairs in the corner if anybody comes in or needs a place to sit. Special thanks to Evelyn Stavsky and Maury Coppell, both well-known community members who have helped tremendously in organizing our benefits and lending their support along with their great spouses, Abram Stavsky and Robbie Coppell. We have a YU Connect advisory board members here. I want to acknowledge the chairman of the board, Henry Orlinsky. Henry, can you wave? Well, he's in the back.
Right there.
All the way in the back. And of course, Mark Goldman is here. He is a true visionary, the founder of SAR-U at Sinai, who really changed the dating world. Our computerized matchmaking system is powered by the SAR-U at Sinai technology. We work closely with Mark. We give each other feedback and are always looking for new ways to expand. Now, of course, our team is here also. Can I ask you to stand up? Dr. Efrat Sobolovsky is here, the most compassionate and sensitive woman, our wonderful director. Rachel Novick, our talented administrator. Lauren Packer-Schreier is outside greeting you, and we appreciate her work as a social work intern this year. You'll see on your tables both Bela Seabrow and Jennifer Mann, columnists in the local papers, submitted additional questions for us because there's so many questions, so much to cover. Whenever we run forums, I think our biggest criticism afterwards is, why couldn't you include this question? Why didn't you cover this? Because there's a lot to cover, and we don't want to keep you on this beautiful Sunday morning from doing anything else. But we added two other interesting questions that you may want to take a look at some point. We also, especially, are very fortunate to have in this room today a few of our wonderful connectors, our matchmakers. We have 80, approximately, matchmakers, who we call connectors, who devote and volunteer their time to help the singles on the site and give guidance and are wonderful, wonderful people who really are outstanding in their caring for their members and in helping us today. I'm going to say the names of the matchmakers who have said that they'll be here. Some may arrive a little later at the end of the program. After the symposium is over, we're going to try to set up some tables on the side where you can stop by and introduce yourselves to matchmakers or find out their information or hear a little bit more about our programs. The matchmakers who are here are Bela Seabrow, Seema Greenstein, Malky Galler. Can you stand up? Do you mind? Come on. And wave. They're sitting here. Laura Posner, Razie Stein. If you're here already, stand up, please. Eileen Kupferman, Helene Warhit, Leia Fink, and Ellie Portell, I think, is here for a while in the back also. Also one of our YU Connects couples. We find that a lot. Some of our YU Connects couples want to give back to the community, and many of our YU Connects couples or members of their family volunteer to be our matchmakers, which we're so extremely grateful for. I'm going to start with introducing the panelists. Now, Bela Seabrow just walked in. Thank you, Bela. Good friends and an outstanding community resource. I'm going to start by introducing the panelists. I'm then going to direct a question to each of them one at a time. Others may feel free to jump in and make any other comments. You can also text any questions you have to my cell phone, that's why I'm wearing pockets, right? Maybe I'll be able to address them after the questions that we have. Some people submitted questions online also. I'm going to start with introducing Rabbi Aryeh Leibowitz, who many of us know needs no introduction in this community. He's the rabbi of Beit Knesset of North Woodmere, currently a Magid Shiur at Lander College for Men, and he's going to be the incoming director of the Smicha program at REITS at Yeshiva University. We're very fortunate to have him, his insight with many of the people he works with, both in his community and as the young men that he encounters. Mrs. Mindy Eisenman is our staff connector at YU Connect. She's recently graduated with her master's degree in social work from Wurzweiler School of Social Work. Mindy is an adjunct professor at Stern College, where she teaches courses in Tanakh, Tarat Mishpacha, and healthy relationships. That's what we're about. She is also a certified Shalom Workshop instructor and already has close to 40 engagements through the site alone, which is wonderful. Recently, you've been fortunate to make even a few Baruch Hashem, Heng Yirgu. I think that's our favorite expression in the office. Rebbetzin Elisheva Kamenetsky is the principal of Judaic Studies, a Tanakh teacher at Stella K. Abraham High School for Girls. She's been involved in Jewish education for over 25 years. She is a college teacher and an outstanding dating mentor. We are so fortunate that these three individuals have volunteered their time today to come and speak to us and offer their words of, with insight. Let's start. We do have a lot of questions to go through, Rabbi Leibowitz. Let's start with a common question that many of you may have encountered with your dating children. Here's one that was brought up. Dove, our son, is dating a young woman for a number of weeks, but I have a few worries. She comes from a different kind of family with different values. What is my role as a parent? What should I bring up? What's not appropriate for me to bring up? And how do I prioritize what to mention? And what's the right way as parents to broach this subject at all with our children?
First of all, I just want to thank you for having me here. It's an honor to be on such a distinguished panel. And also thank everyone for coming this morning. As you might have guessed, of the three panelists, I am the least experienced and know the least about any of these topics. So take everything I say with a grain of salt. But I do have some experience with talking to boys and dealing with boys and their parents. And I would say, in terms of values issues, that's such a broad term. Values can mean so many different things, that the first step is, if you feel that your child is dating someone and comes from a family with different values, you have to first define what those values are. You have to look inside of yourself and see if are these values things that are really important or just the way I live my life, and therefore I think that's how my child should live their life as well. Sometimes children don't always share exactly the same values as the parents, and we always have to be thinking about what's best for our children and what's going to be best for their long-term happiness. You know, if a parent can't imagine that their daughter's going to eat kebabs, you know, that's it's against my values. Well, that's a problem. I mean, that's not something that we need to impose on our child. Or even just in terms of standard of living, my daughter's not going to be able to buy as many designer shoes as she wants. That's how could that possibly be? My son is not. You know, something like that. If those are the values, then we need to reassess our own values. However, values can also mean very important things, things that are part of how we define ourselves and how our children define themselves. And bringing these topics up can sometimes feel like it's an attack on the person that your child is dating. So one has to do this very carefully. The best way to do it, I think, is that our conversations should not be just troubleshooting. It should not be when there's a problem, then we start the conversations with our children about whether this is a proper shidduch or not. There should be communication from the very beginning, and by the very beginning I mean birth of our children. But that relationship is built over time, and the communication should be there to the point where when our children are dating, we should be able to speak to them throughout, where we're talking through the issues with them. You know, I once had to deal with somebody, I needed something from somebody, and someone gave me, I'm being very vague, but someone gave me Eitza and said, this person will do anything for you. He will do whatever you need. All you have to do is convince him that it's his idea, and then he'll do anything for you. I think a lot of that is useful when it comes to dealing with our children. Instead of speaking at them and telling them what their values ought to be, talk with them and have them come to those realizations and them come to those decisions on their own. But most importantly, to be non-judgmental, make sure that our children know we're on their team. We're only interested in what's best for them. I often talk to my Talmidim and they'll ask me for advice about something, and I'll start with the same disclaimer I started with today, and then I'll ask, what do your parents think? And sometimes, although thank God less often now, sometimes they'll look at me sideways like, my parents? Well, why would my parents have an opinion on this? And I tell them, look, I love you, Tatala, but your parents love you even more. And they're more invested in you and your future and what's best for you. It's very important that there be communication with them. One word of caution, I know we're on a clock here, one word of caution is that if before you say anything negative or anything that could be construed as negative, realize that if your child is in a relationship where they're very emotionally invested, they're not always going to make the wisest decisions about what to share and what not to share. And it is very likely that if something is said in the wrong way, it will be shared with the other party. And it's very likely that that other party is going to be a member of your family for a very, very long time. And even though you're able to get, people are able to move past things, they're able to forgive, in my experience, the next time something comes up, it's not just going to be something that comes up the next time. It's going to be, oh, here we go again. And remember when your mother or your father said about me, when I, it will always come back. One needs to be very, very careful about speaking a negative word about anybody ever, but particularly in this area.
Sometimes people want to check out the values in advance, or they want to know a little bit more about that family. Rabbi, what about the question of checking references? Is that something that parents do? Should children do it? Have you ever encountered that? And if so, if you are calling to be a reference or try to find out more about another person's background, what are the appropriate questions to say other than, do they use purple tablecloths?
References should definitely be checked, but you should also understand their limitations. A lot of the references don't know the person that well. You should understand if the reference knows the parents, the family, has a vague idea of the child, or the reference maybe knows the child in a particular context, but not in every context. And you have to really take it with the understanding that the reference probably doesn't have the full picture. It's also important to ask the right questions. You know, true story, I got a phone call from someone asking about a boy who lives in my neighborhood and who went to DRS, and the fellow said, I'm calling to check out your reference for this young man, and he was mentioned for my daughter. I have a few questions. I said, okay, that's normally the way the conversation starts. No problem, happy to help you. He said, does the boy wear a hat? I said, no. He said, okay, does the boy wear white shirts? I said, sometimes. How does the boy dress on Shabbos? I said, nicely. And the person said, okay, I have no further questions. And I said, really? that's all you need to know? Like, it's not that those are questions that don't give some idea about something, but if those are the only questions you ask, then your values are so, talking about values, your values are so far off from my values that I don't even know why you would respect my opinion on anything. I don't even know why you would call me about something. I'll tell you another story. I received a phone call from someone I've become somewhat friendly with over the past couple of years, who's an extraordinarily successful person. And by successful, I don't just mean wealthy, even though it's usually the way the term is meant. But he is a very wealthy person, also a tremendous Talmud Chacham, someone who's having a tremendous impact on Klal Yisrael, a really, really top quality person, top quality family, and he's calling to check out a reference. He was calling to check out a boy from the Five Towns who was mentioned for his daughter. And he didn't know anybody in the Five Towns. He's not from here, so he said he only knows me. He said, do you know this boy, or can you find out about this boy? I said, I don't know him, but I know what schools he went to. I can speak to his rebbe. I can find out whatever you need to find out. So he said, I said, what do you want me to ask? I don't know your daughter. He said, I just want to know that he's going to treat my daughter nicely. I want to know that he's going to be good to my daughter. So I called up one of the rebbeim of this boy, and they said, oh, he's brilliant, and he's accomplished, and they went on and on about his genius, and I said, it doesn't really matter, and they were telling me he's from a wealthy family, and he's in Harvard, he's whatever it was. I said, it doesn't really matter. He really only wanted to know, will this boy treat his daughter nicely? And the Rebbe said, oh, no, that's the wrong guy. If that's the question, then it's the wrong guy. So depending on the questions you ask, you may find out the information you need to find out or not. So it's again, just to review, to be cognizant of the limitations of the references themselves and to make sure you're asking the important things about things that are actually going to affect the marriage and your child's long-term happiness.
Thank you. I'll also add that it often differs with your own personal wish to check in advance or maybe after two or three dates. Some people want to be more open and accepting and say, I'll go out with somebody. If you hear that he's a fine person without checking too many questions in the beginning, and then as time goes on, they may want to just find out a little bit more. Mindy, let me go on to a related question. My daughter Miriam doesn't talk to me about dating, but I'd like to know more about her life. How and when do I broach the subject with her in a sensitive manner?
Good morning, everyone. Firstly, I want to thank you all for coming. The fact that you're here shows me what amazing parents you are. Helping our children build healthy and happy relationships is really a group partnership. Teachers, mentors, educators, matchmakers, but most importantly and first and foremost, it's you, the parents, where you inculcate all those wonderful values into your children. So kol hakavod to all of you for showing up today. I really appreciate it, and I hope that we all give you some insight and assistance in this process. In terms of the question, Margie, it is a complex question because every child is an individual, and every relationship we have with each of our children is different and unique. Think of the type of child that you have and the relationship. Maybe you have that child, you know, when they were little, they came home and you said, how was school? And they said, fine. And what did you do? Nothing. chances are that's the same type of relationship you're going to have when talking to them about dating. And you know what? It's okay and it's normal. However, we want to make sure that our children understand that we care for them. And therefore, this is the type of child that we probably need to take out for lunch, special time, just you and your child. Have a serious discussion with them about values, what's important, what they should be looking for, where their life is headed. Let them know that you care for them. Let them know that you have their best interests at heart. This gives you a chance to talk about life and then weave in the concept of dating and that you're here to help them and to guide them. Sometimes, however, it's always best if they are not opening up, besides letting them know that you care for them, to discuss with them the idea of seeking advice from a mentor or from a rav. Now, you might have the other type of child. You know, the one that comes home from school and tells you who got in trouble and who hit who on the playground and everything that's going on in the class. Chances are, when you want to talk about dating, that type of child will also be very open. However, that doesn't mean that they don't need individual attention as well. Oh, sorry.
And let us know, can you hear in the back?
Can you hear me?
I'm told the back can't hear. Everyone should talk a little louder. Thank you.
All right, thank you. That type of child needs your assistance as well, needs your love and support, also deserves time out with you, lunch, quiet time, also to discuss values. And this is something I'm sure you realize is not something to just start talking about when your child is dating. This is something that should always be subliminally weaved into conversation and modeled. Always take a step back. Always let your child know that you trust them. We respect them, we love them, and when they're ready to share, we're here for them. It's very important to recognize that today, more people than ever do seek outside and non-biased opinions. We have an amazing amount of resources today of stellar religious professionals, and they have wonderful training, and they can help evaluate situations that perhaps, if we as parents are a little biased, they help us see things clearly.
Thank you.
Please. Just as you were speaking, Mindy, I was reminded of something that I heard from Dr. Pelkovitz many, many years ago, not directly in connection with dating, but actually with parenting. And he described something that he refers to as the check-in. And it pertains to the first prototype of a child that Mindy discussed, of the child who seems to be more closed, doesn't really give you all that much information. Sometimes that child doesn't want to. And certainly as a young adult, my opinion is, they have a right to have the privacy of their lives and their experiences. We are, you know, I'm not of the opinion, maybe even for any of our children, to be tracking them, but certainly are, and I mean that technically with an app or emotionally, but certainly for a young adult, you know, they have their right to their privacy and their lives. But even that, sometimes that child is not really as closed or as uninterested in connecting to us as they may appear. And they actually really are looking for that connection. They're just not quite sure how to start the conversation. Or maybe they know that you're really busy and may not have the time or the place or what the right setting is. So Dr. Pelkovitz described this check-in, and I'll tell you what it looks like in my house over the years. It's 10 o'clock at night. We've had a big full dinner. Maybe we even went out for ice cream afterwards. And a child comes down and starts looking through the pantry. Can I help you? Do you want something? Are you still hungry? No, just looking. What that really is, he explains, and I found it to be so incredibly true, is maybe I want to talk about something, not really sure how to do it. And if you would put down your phone or put down your pen or look up from the newspaper, I could figure out how to start that conversation. So I just put out there to look out for those check-ins, even from our emerging adults, certainly from our adolescents, because they're there. Sometimes it's the, ma, you know, can you take me to CVS to pick something up? They don't really need that thing from CVS so desperately, but just want that alone time that Mindy described.
Thank you. Good point. And no, but sometimes I go to the kitchen and I really just do want that nash. it's not about talking to anybody. I am opening the pantry. Okay. Rebbetzin Kamenetsky, let me follow up with another question with you, for you directly. Sarah has been dating someone for a while, and I'd love for her to bring a young man to our home to meet him. Is there protocol? She's not sure it's the right time for us to officially meet him. What's common practice? And related to that, some people always want to know, is it appropriate to spend Shabbos together at a parent's house? Is that too forward? So I'd like to hear your opinion on that.
So I too want to express my hakaras hatov. I'm here this morning because I believe so much in the need for us to partner together as educators, connectors, and parents and community to help our children through the dating process. But in all honesty, I also have my own deep hakaras hatov to YU Connects, as my children are a YU Connects couple. Dr. Sabalovsky, Rebbetzin Sabalovsky, was their connector, and we are forever indebted to her efforts. In terms of the question itself, I think that it's important to break down this concept of coming home to meet the parents into two parts. There's the curiosity and the interest on the part of the parents, like I just referred to a few minutes ago, and knowing what their children are experiencing. And I think that that is, of course, super important, and we are vitally important players in the role of our children choosing their partner. But in terms of the timing of it, I actually think that, you know, that should be something that the couple is ready for and interested in. Somehow this, you know, meeting the parents has become a major watershed mark for many people. Obviously, different couples of different orientations, you know, it depends. Have you known this person for years and years and we were friends in high school? Is this somebody who we were just set up with in more of a blind date type of style? There are obviously variables in how it works. But I think we actually play a huge role in bringing down that tension and bringing them home. If it's we're going to pull out the china and we're going to have a four-course meal on a Wednesday night because they're coming home, there's going to be a lot of hype to that event. And it's going to feel scary and overwhelming, both to your child and the person he's bringing home. And therefore, it actually might be something that they push off happening, because it seems to mean a lot to you and a lot to us. In my opinion, our children should be bringing home their people that they're dating without any real expectation that they're getting married. But here's an opportunity, and here's where I come to part two, to get to know me, because you're meeting people who are important to me. On some level, I'm not comparing parents to friends. It's not all equal, but it would be no different than, you know, I want you to meet my best friend, because that's a person who's important to me in my life as well. So I do think that it's something which should be encouraged. And at the same time, I think it's something that we have to lowball a little bit, because we add to the pressure in them bringing people home. I will add that in terms of what it means for the couple, and not just our own curiosity about who they're dating, I actually think it's a really important step. I was recently talking to a young man who was saying, you know, I've been going out with this girl, you know, for a few months actually it was, and, you know, we were really connecting on every level, but I'm not really sure how to move this forward. Maybe that's a question that we'll get to a little bit later, because it's a big question. But one of the things that I suggested was, you know, how are you dating? Are you doing anything regular together? Meaning, is every date an event? We're going to go here, and we're going to do this together, and then we're going to eat out here. Are you ever, this particular boy happens to live out of town, he dorms in YU. I said, are you ever stopping to pick up your dry cleaning as part, you know, doing an errand as part of the date? Are you ever just going to the grocery store to stock up on something? Because that's real life. And I want to be clear, there's an element of experiencing real life that Chazal talk about, that we need to know people in all different settings, bikiso, koso, vikaso, that's very important. But that's actually not even what I'm referring to in suggesting those kinds of regular events. Are you buying Mother's Day cards together? Whatever it might be. I actually think it's just a part of being regular and normal. Dating doesn't have to be something that we prepare for. We can function naturally through a 3-hour period and pick up supplies that we need for regular life and do things together, not just to get to know how you'll react in those situations, but because we may be living together and doing all sorts of regular things. Not everything is about, you know, the great exhibit or the awesome restaurant or whatever it might be. And that's something which makes people comfortable and gives them a sense of, you know, we're just normal, regular people. Of course, I would add to that list of errands coming to my house, seeing what my living room looks like, understanding what it's like to putter around in my kitchen, and of course, meeting my parents. So this concept of meeting parents, I think, is actually, if we tone it down and make it regular and normal, could be a major stepping stone for our couples in just being normal together, relaxing. How do we connect in regular, normal interactions?
Yep. Just to add one quick point, there is a difference between coming for a Shabbos and coming to the house. I mean, coming for a Shabbos is much harder to make regular and normal because the boys can go to shul on Shabbos if it's your daughter, and the boys can go to shul on Shabbos, and people will say, oh, do you know here? And then it's going to become a public thing. So, you know, coming on a weeknight is a little bit different. We should recognize that. Also, even though we're supposed to speak gender neutral today, but I think there may be a difference between boys and girls in this regard, in that, as Ms. Kamenetsky was saying, things should happen somewhat naturally. Naturally, when you go to somebody's house, you meet the people who are in the house. So if a boy is going to pick up a girl at her house, then it's natural that he should meet her parents when he's going to pick her up at the house, instead of texting, I'm 3 blocks away, meet me. You know, it should be, that will happen in a more natural way.
It's true.
Margie, can I just add one quick
thing? Absolutely.
Sorry.
That's what I
just...
I agree with Rabbi Leibowitz that there are differences in the Shabbos. I just want to suggest one, one compromise on the Shabbos thing. You know, if you are from our neighborhood here in the Five Towns, there are what many couples I find do is they do the Shabbos thing, but in a lower keyed way. Many of them have friends or relatives that live locally. You know, they can stay there, even daven with their uncle in a different minyan or shul, and in a little bit of a quieter way, spend quality time with the family over Shabbos, which can be so wonderful. So just, you can think creatively about ways to make that something which can be more doable.
Thank you. And I do think spending a Shabbos together is crucial. I think when you interact with the family, when you see whether your potential daughter-in-law or son-in-law gets up and helps clear the table, so you get to see how they interact together in a family setting is extremely helpful for parents to assess related to some of the questions we talked about earlier. Here's an interesting question for Rabbi Leibowitz, and one that I think many of us have discussed among ourselves in the past. Yosef is not yet financially independent. Neither is Sarah, the young lady he is dating. They are dating seriously, though. Is it appropriate to slow the relationship so that we can buy time until they are more financially secure? How do we teach our children financial responsibility and infuse more independence? I think this is a generational question that is coming up more than in the days many of us dated. I'd like to hear Rabbi Leibowitz's opinion on it.
I hope this doesn't sound too controversial. I think if this conversation is first coming up as the relationship is progressing, it's coming up too late. I think the conversation should be had before Yosef starts to date. Yosef, are you ready to date? Yeah, I'm ready. What does I'm ready mean? Does it mean, well, all my friends are dating and therefore I need to be dating? What's the plan? I'll often ask my Talmidim when they ask me, do you think I'm ready to date? And I know some people may not like this tactic, but I'll often ask them, well, can you picture yourself being a father in a year from now? And if they run away scared, then likely they're not ready to date. You have to understand the implications of it. Now, in many situations, it's agreed upon in advance that the parents are going to help out because the children are not going to be able to do it. In that case, if the parent is saying, let's slow it down because I'm going to be helping you as you graduate medical school or dental school or whatever it is, whatever graduate school or smicha, whatever it is that you're going through, I think slowing a relationship down for that reason, you're never going to slow it down enough to make a difference. You're supporting them for the next 3 years. So you're going to slow it down by 2 months, and the agmas nefesh that that's going to cause, if that's your goal in slowing it down, it's not really going to make a difference. Having said that, and here's, I guess, controversial statement number two, based on recent experiences that I've had with chassanim and kalos, I think maybe slowing down a relationship, not for financial reasons, but slowing down relationships in general might be a good idea in many cases in our community. The way our community is, the experiences people have had in the past, there's a lot there that needs to be unpacked. And sometimes when things happen quickly, people can pretend to be something for a short amount of time. And over a longer amount of time, you can get a better sense of who a person is. I was talking to one Rebbe recently who told me that over the last year he was dealing with 8 cases of broken engagements. That means that people didn't do their, and there are obviously a lot of factors, but one of the factors is that maybe, not for financial reasons, maybe people didn't think it through clearly enough before getting engaged. So slowing down dating may not always be a bad idea. Obviously it comes with certain risks. The longer the process stretches, the greater the risk of certain averos chamuros, which we are very sensitive to, and is a factor in our lives, obviously, as Avdei Hashem. But I think slowing down for financial reasons is a little bit it's counterproductive. In terms of the limits of what a parent should get involved in and should not, look, if a parent is paying the bills and is supporting the child, a parent has to be careful that it not become a relationship where the children feel like their parents are running the marriage as well. The children need to become independent. They need to feel that they're beginning a life together. I've had, unfortunately, cases of parents who've told their children, you're not allowed to have children of your own for X amount of time because we're not paying that bill. That's a line that you should not cross. If you're concerned about their emotional well-being, so that's a different story and that has to be discussed. But if you're just concerned about your own pocketbook, that's something that, as Mori Rabbi Rav Willick said, a parent does not belong in their child's bedroom. That's not something that they should be involved with. It's important that we realize that our children are really ready, and that's why I asked that question, are you ready to be a father? I had one case recently where a couple was dating. The boy was planning on learning for 2 years before starting working as an accountant, and the girl, as through the entire dating process, the girl was understanding that she was going to work, and their understanding was she was going to help support them. That was their understanding, because she was told that there's nothing better than that. And for many people, there is nothing better than that, being able to live that kind of lifestyle for the first couple of years. She didn't come from that kind of background, and in the middle of the engagement, she started, for lack of a better term, freaking out. Is this what I really want? The responsibility is going to be on me to support us? And she was told, you want a learning boy, you want a learning boy, so she repeated that. I want a learning boy, I want, but she never really understood what that meant. What that meant for her and what that meant for how the next couple of years of her life are going to play out. So I would say that, again, just to go back to what I said at the beginning, all of these things, or as many of these things as possible, should be dealt with before the dating process begins so that we can make sure that our children are in fact ready to date and live the life that they're interested in living.
One quick sentence.
Just that anytime there are conversations with finances, we know this in all arenas of our lives, and honestly, it's no different with our children. If parents do make the choice to help their children at any point in their marriage financially, clarity is the key. These are not easy conversations to have. It's much easier to just kind of drop money into the account or to stuff bills into the pocketbook the way my grandmother always did on my way out the door kind of a thing. We don't like to have conversations about money, but when there is no clarity, that's where I believe a lot of tension comes in. So whatever your personal decision is, to do, not to do, how much, when, how long, be clear in your own minds what it is that is in your intention and clearly communicate it to your children. And when that happens, I find there's far less tension around these issues.
Thank you. Here's a common question that I'm sure will affect many people in the room. My daughter Talia tells me I need to be more proactive in networking and finding match ideas for her. I'm naturally shy and feel uncomfortable asking others if they know young men for her to date. Whose responsibility is it? Even if I want to help, I'm not sure how. My parents weren't involved in my dating life. So what resources are out there for me? I think there's no better person just about in the room to answer that than Mindy Eisenman. An excellent resource.
Thank you, Margie. We get this question a lot in the office. And of course, the social work answer is always, it depends, right? Really, ideally, it is better for the person who is in the dating scene, whether it's your son or your daughter, to contact us directly. I know that when I meet with someone, I can get a better sense of who they are and what they're looking for than just by talking to someone else. On the other hand, as parents, whether we're more extroverted or introverted, because we're always looking out for our children, so it's always a good idea when you're sitting informally here at the table, at a wedding, just like if your son is looking for a job in accounting, you might just say to people, oh, what do you do? Do you know anyone who's in accounting? My son is looking for a job. Can I send you, you know, his information? So to hear, perhaps with your child, come up with a two-sentence blurb of a little bit about their personality, a little bit about values that are important to them, and pass it on. You never know when you speak to someone if they have a nephew, a cousin, a neighbor who it just clicks for. That happens all the time. So again, while we think it's important for the person who is dating to be involved, after all, if they are old enough to get married, they are old enough to be proactive in terms of their dating life. It is also wonderful to have parents who look out for their children. And again, whether this is easy for us or a little bit out of our comfort zone, it is a good idea to always have something nice to say about our children. You never know who you're going to meet. In the office, one of our favorite sayings is Harbei Shluchim Lamakom. You never know where it's going to come from. We have a lot of events. It happens to be that while we have the upcoming Woodmere Shabbaton, I believe it's in 2 weeks, Margie? And we almost always have an engagement from there. 1 year, one of the young ladies made such a wonderful impression on her hosts that they set her up with their nephew, and that was the engagement. So you never know. It's not just from meeting people. It's meeting people wherever you go. Also, wherever your child is living, it's wonderful if they participate in Shabbos meals with other people. Events, like I mentioned, are great. Interacting with other people. There are so many initiatives today that people can attend to help them find someone. And of course, as I always like to say, be busy in your own life. We need to make sure that our children recognize that dating is only a small segment of their life. And if they have passion and happiness in other areas of their life, that will spill over and make them a better dater.
We do encourage everyone to sign up for YU Connects also. We say it's one method of hishtadlus. We have, again, we're open to the world. We mostly deal with people on the under 40, but we often get asked to give ideas for people of all ages. YU Connects has 3,500 members, 80 volunteer shadchanim. We're linked to the database with Saw You at Sinai that has an additional 10,000 members and 200 matchmakers. Virtually everybody these days is online in one form or the other. It's not uncommon, and it's just one other method to, and one other resource that we like to obviously talk about. Let me ask Reverend Kamenetsky, related to the question to Mindy. Sometimes our daughters have difficulty maintaining confidence. Sometimes they're often declined by one boy after another for no good reason. I want to calm her down when she gets anxious. What's the right thing to say to my daughter when I see her becoming anxious about her whole dating life? In fact, I'm sure you'll say it starts very young, even before they date, we find.
So first I'll put in the disclaimer that I do believe this should be a gender, and I'm sure Margie intends it as a gender neutral question. So when I respond in the hers and she's, it's probably just because I see that, as Margie said, this is not unique to dating. I guess that's what I see yo-me in the female side. But I do believe it's there for both. So the first is to acknowledge that when it comes to dating, and to certainly validate for anybody who is dating, that dating is exhausting, stressful, and grueling. Even if it doesn't come with a lot of rejections, it's something which is takes very, very time consuming. And we honestly hope that people are dating by putting their whole self forward and not doing it half-heartedly. And that makes it something which is trying on people who are dating. But as Margie referred to, this is not the first time or the last time that our children will be in situations that are stressful, exhausting, and grueling. And the resilience that's needed is something which actually needs to start at a very, very young age. I think that somehow the expectation, and I'll hypothesize, but this is just a layperson's hypothesis, that it has to do with some of the stress that surrounds dating in the terminology of shidduch crisis and the talk and one should certainly say reality of a growing number of older singles, that there has become a heightened need for it to go smoothly and easily. That when it doesn't, after, and that's why, I guess there's of course the variables in all these questions, but what's constantly mean? For some people, constantly means they've dated 80 times, and for some it means they've dated 8. There is a, I cannot tell you what the high percentage of people who I encounter who are in a state of panic they haven't found the person they're going to spend the rest of their life with after 8 times. Something must be terribly wrong. I'm being rejected so constantly. And I've actually never articulated this to anybody individually, and I'm not quite sure why I'm about to do it so publicly. But in my head, often runs through, I'm really sorry, how many stores did you go to look for the couch for your living room? When we are looking for the perfect thing, or for the right thing, don't love the word perfect either, honestly, we have to sift. And that should be. We shouldn't be jumping at the first opportunity for things that matter as much as this, and we don't. So normalizing both the fact that it's stressful and that it's grueling and that it can be off-putting to really like somebody and have them not reciprocate that is important, but it's also important to normalize that this kind of makes sense. That we're not, it's a little unrealistic. We desperately want the best for our children. We want it to go smoothly for them in all areas of life. That's because we love them so much and we only want the best for them. But if we take a step back and think about the big picture, it's kind of normal and would make sense that there's some and I don't love the word sifting, but there is some rejection, honestly, that is going to be a part of that process until two people find the right person to spend the rest of their lives with in that particular way. I do think, though, that the point that it really starts from the beginning, which has been a pretty consistent theme in all of the panelists' answers here, is true. Our children will be best prepared for that if, you know, when they really wanted that part in the play in third grade and they didn't get it because it was given to somebody else and they feel that rejection, that they have flexed those resilience muscles from the third grade. And that when they really have been planning since the last day of camp the year before who their bunk is going to be the next year, they are coached throughout those 11 months of the camp season, or 10 months from camp season to camp season. Well, what if it doesn't work out that way? And what if that isn't going to be the teacher that you want is not going to be the one that you're given? We live in a world where we sometimes confuse our role as parents in kind of like paving that way for our children so that all that they wish for comes easily for them. And I think it's something to consider that we best prepare our children for what I believe is the natural part of rejection in dating by helping them cope earlier on with that resilience. And just one last point, as I referred, because of our immense unconditional love for our children, we get anxious. And it's important to make sure that the anxiety that we may be seeing in our children is not really a reflection of our own anxiety, that we're not oozing and dripping in a way that creates their anxiety more. Again, with some frequency, I'll meet a parent who will say, reach out my daughter, she's shy to reach out to you, she's really struggling. I'll be very honest when I do have that connection, and I hanistro slashem alokeinu. Maybe she's putting up a strong front to me and I'm reading it all wrong and it's something, you know, I've misread the situation. But often when I actually speak to the young lady, she's okay. She has, as Mindy said, many other things that are going so well in her life. Her inner confidence is actually not destroyed. She's frustrated, exhausted, and disappointed. But she is resilient, and she is able to get up the next day and embrace all that's going well in her life and looking forward to the day that this too will fall into place for her. That's an excellent answer. I'm going to ask you one more question related to anxiety. What if they think they found each other? What about that question? Someone submitted it through a text. What if they're dating, but they have that anxiety about knowing, is this the right one? What if they can't move forward after a long-term relationship? They can't just jump into it. That's a tough question, but one that we get in our office quite a lot, where they're dating, but they haven't been able to say, let's get engaged. Do any of the panelists want to address that?
Go right ahead.
Let's start.
No, it's too hard, right?
Likewise.
There we go. So it happens to be that I just spent Shabbos at an NCSY staff training with hundreds of marriageable age young men and women. YU Connects was actually there and was a part of the program, but so was, I could quote him all day, Dr. Malkovitz. And there was a panel that he was on Shabbos afternoon. And one of the questions that he and Rav Moshe Tzvi Weinberg and Charlie Harari, they were the panelists, I know you wish you were there, it was pretty great, it was such a fascinating question. What is the question that you get often that you wish you didn't get? And what is the question that you don't get that you wish that you got? It was really awesome. And Dr. Pelkovitz said that the question that he gets most often surrounds anxiety. Anxiety is, it's everywhere. Clinically, not clinically, there are so many things that we can attribute that to, everything from, you know, our connections to our phones and social media, the dopamine that gives, it's a whole nother topic for another time, et cetera. The unfortunately very unstable world that we live in terms of medical issues, in terms of terrorism and everything else, but we live in a very, very anxious world. And therefore, honestly, it's really not that surprising that when you're making the biggest decision and most influential decision in your life, I actually think that it makes perfect sense that people have a level of anxiety. In fact, one of the questions which I often ask to young people when they say, oh, I'm about to get engaged, I'm so excited, you've got to meet them, the most amazing people, I often say, what concerns you? And when they say nothing, that's actually why my antennas go up a little bit. You know, what is it that you had to work through in your relationship, and how did you work through it? That's an important part of building a healthy relationship. So, you know, like anything else, when that anxiety can be managed on your own, because it should be there, and it is a part, then that's great. I think the question is referring to a place where it's not something that can be self-regulated. And then I just will say that I am a huge proponent of seeking professional help. I know those words sound very scary and daunting. I am grateful that we're living in a world where it's actually becoming a little bit more normal to hear those words. But I want to clarify that I'm not referring to help that requires 2 sessions a week for the rest of your life. There are so many people and resources that are, you know, mental health professionals that are particularly skilled in helping people manage their anxiety through the intense dating process. And we should take advantage of them. We should encourage our children to take advantage of them. One of the huge benefits that I find in that is not just that they help manage them proceed through the dating and engagement process and get to the chuppah with the right person, but they now have somebody in their back pocket so that if anything arises at any point in a marriage that they have a question about, that they're unsure about, that they need chizuk, it's awkward to make that first call or to feel, oh, my marriage is in trouble and now we have to go seek help. No, your marriage is not in trouble. You're looking for a little tune-up. You're looking for a little chizuk. You're looking to navigate through that place. If somebody knows your name and you have somebody's name to call.
I agreed with everything.
Mindy said she agreed with everything. So did I. We've been getting some text to my phone, but I think that I'd rather wrap it up right now. And if anybody has a few questions that they want to approach the panelists with separately, that would be wonderful. I also want to be able to thank the panelists again. Thank everybody for coming. And I'd like to make one more remark. We wrote in our emails that we'll announce a new Long Island initiative. I just want to say that YU Connects is probably one of the very few organizations that's always looking for initiatives. We're partnering with the OU. We're planning new ideas. We're always looking to grow, to help the community in many, many ways. We're often hearing of other websites or things that would help the singles that we refer them to. As far as dating mentors or therapists, we have lists of resources on our website, or people call us and we're always helping them there. But we're always looking on a global scale. It's not only about the one-on-one matchmaking. We partner with organizations. People come in with good ideas all the time. So one of the very nice ideas we've started recently is in Bergen County, there is a designated connector that is assisting the Bergen County men and women. And I'm very happy to announce that we now have a regional connector for Long Island. Mrs. Malky Galler, please stand up, will be focusing on helping out the people that we want to assist. No, meeting Malky is loving Malky. She has been involved with YU Connects or Saw You at Sinai for about 7 years, and it has been facilitating matches after events. She is, along with many other fine matchmakers in this room, Seema Greenstein sitting here, many others that you'll see momentarily, are amazing people who are really here to help us all. Please feel free to introduce yourself to Malky. She'll be glad to make appointments to meet your children or your loved one in the 5 towns, as Minty is always meeting people and Dr. Sebelovsky is always meeting people at Yeshiva University. So So I wanted to just announce Malvi. Also, after the program's over, I'm going to ask if the first three tables could be designated for some matchmakers who will come to these three or four tables, if anybody wants to quickly introduce themselves to the matchmakers. But before we end, acharon acharon chaviv, which is very easy for me to say, I'd like to introduce my husband, Rabbi Aaron Blatt, who will just close the program for us. Oh, and as he's coming up, I do want to acknowledge Rebbetzin Sobolovsky's husband, Rosh Yeshiva Rabbi Sobolovsky, who honored us with his presence today. Thank you.
Of course, Hakar Satova, in recognition of Rabbi Sobolovsky Shlita for being here. Thank you all for coming here today. I would only make one comment. I would say that the people at the Shabbaton that you were at would be only too thrilled to be at this symposium, not the other way around. And this symposium panel can match up with any symposium panel. And I really thank you all for volunteering your time on a Sunday morning when there are many other things going on. A tremendous thank you to all of you. Margie wanted me to give a 45-minute complex drasha on Pesach Sheni, but I said no. What am I here speaking about? You have people with far more experience and knowledge than I in this room. If it was a doctor, we have Rabbi Sobolovsky Shlita. I'm here to tell you what supporting this organization actually means. This organization has a relatively small budget. They're housed at YU, but they're not supported by YU. They have lots of resources at YU, the wonderful Russian yeshiva, Rav Schefter Shlita, Rav Ruler Shlita, Rav Sobolovsky Shlita, by Leibowitz Shlita in the near future. There are tremendous resources that YU offers to YU Connect, but as has been mentioned, this is not supported fully by YU. They provide the housing, but the entire budget is made up by people in this room supporting this organization. They do more than just have shadchanim to meet with the kids. Most of the shadchanim are volunteers, but they put together professional programs. They have resources for the shadchanim. They have events. They try to charge almost nothing. As hard as it sounds, why can't people pay? Some people are not able to pay to come to events, a weekend, the Shabbaton, whatever the event may be. There are resources that are needed that are simple financial resources. Everybody in this room should be more than just a financial resource. Everybody in this room should do everything they can to make shidduchim. Margie loves to quote the Marsha that says, when they're going to ask us at 120, or sock to the Piri of the Rivian, did you get involved in Piri of the Rivian? They're not going to see how many children you had. They're going to ask you, according to Marsha, what did you do to make shidduchim for other people? And everybody in this room has that potential. The greatest bracha Chazal tells us is if you daven for someone else, you assist someone else in what they need, and you have the same need, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will answer you as well, and will answer you first. So if you have children in need of the shidduch, the best way to go and help those children is to help somebody else make the shidduch, to daven for someone else. The one thing that maybe we can do more is in our davening every day, think of a couple, a person that you know, that would like to be a couple. Think of a young lady, a young man, and not so young lady, and not so young man, and daven for them. Even if you don't have an etzah, the best etzah is to daven for them. The second best etzah is to open up your wallet. Everybody in this room hopefully is considering writing a check. Double it. Whatever you were thinking, 360 shidduchim that this organization has made came here ago. A little bit of money sometimes is what's stopping the shidduch from being made. Every little bit that you can do to help support will bring us one step closer to Mashiach Tzidkenu, because under the Kisya cover there are neshamas that are waiting to come into this world. And sometimes the only thing stopping those neshamas from coming into this world is the lack of a partner. Be'ezus Hashem, with educational events such as this, what we can do as parents, as friends, as community members to increase opportunities for young children to meet in a kosher way, to hopefully B'ezus Hashem get them to connect with each other and to get them married in B'ezus Hashem to build a bias dem of Yisrael. Your support is critical to that. Thank you so much for coming today. Please take advantage of the wonderful matchmakers and connectors that we have here, and please Bapashkas, or Pesach Sheni, not to have all the food taken care of, because we need our stomachs to be Al Hasova when we eat the Karbon Pesach this afternoon in Eretz Yisrael. Happy New Year. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, everyone, for coming.